Welcome to the Life Insurance Financial Education Podcast. We're pulling back the curtain on high cash value life insurance and how it can help you build wealth and achieve your financial goals. I'm your host, James Barber, your Oregon Cash Flow Pro.
And I'm Carlo Vaccaro with NetWealth Finance.
Appreciate you guys joining us this week. We are going to be talking about blended designs. What does a max blend design do compared to a normal blend design? Why do you need to know this stuff? And how does it help you? This is going to be more of a conversation between me and Carlo. Jing can't join us today. She's indisposed with a sick child. And so we're just going to jump right into this. Carlo, there's so much talk about there in this life insurance space. Well, first of all, let's just say that we're assuming that you, the listener, have figured out how good these things are. And you're interested in them. But what can they do for you? You hear all kinds of arguments from different sources about what is the right design, what's an optimal design. Some people will say that there's no design that's the same for everybody. And presumably, a lot of these cases that they're saying that is, it seems to me, an attempt to justify that you might be the type of person that should be paying a high commission design or a high expense design. Certainly not that a low expense design is appropriate for everybody. What do you think?
I would say there's very few circumstances in my mind where we shouldn't do some kind of blended design. And the context we're talking about when talking blended designs is a blend of cheap term insurance with the base whole life or universal life policy. And that's non-commissionable term. And so the reason why there's almost no circumstance. There are some where we might just go all base for certain circumstances, but most of the time we want to use some kind of blend because that lowers the expenses. Lowering that commission, lowering the expenses means more cash value in the client's pocket and more chance for success overall. So it's really, in my mind, when we're talking about high cash value life insurance, the blend is basically a requirement.
The likelihood of success is what it all comes back to for us. Which design gives our client the highest likelihood of success? In my mind, that's going to be something that has a low commitment, a low base expense to it, low underlying expenses to it, that turns into the most cash value if funded properly. Clearly, these are some caveats in here, but if the client is going to fund it at a certain level, we're going to step into this policy with certain expectations, right? Everybody comes into this situation with high expectations. Their current income is either going to stay the same or expand, and they need a safe place to put their money, or they need a place to put their money that's going to supplement the rest of their financial plan. And this is going to help serve the safe part of that. Like, everybody comes into it that way. Nobody comes into this thinking they're going to encounter a financial emergency in a month or a year or 2 years, that might totally derail that plan. And this is where I think the types of designs that we do that have a minimal expense to it and put more cash value available in the early years is going to give that policy a greater chance of success if our client encounters some type of financial stumbling block, something that might otherwise totally derail their entire plan. If they've committed to a really high base level of commission, and they've got to put thousands of dollars or tens of thousands every single year, no matter what, at the base level, and suddenly their finances don't allow that, that policy could lapse. That's like the worst thing in the world to happen in that situation. And in my mind, so what can we do to avoid that?
Yeah, I think you touched on a lot of great points there. The ability to have a much smaller percentage of your total premium being your required premium, that gives you that buffer for certain circumstances. So let's say you want to put in $20,000 a year, but if your minimum requirement of premium to pay in might be something like $3,000, $4,000 a year in order to keep that policy in force. So if you have a circumstance that changes your financial situation, you can fund at a lower level. And in many carriers, you can do some catch-up funding, and many you don't have that flexibility. But there's a lot of options when you design to minimize those expenses. And there are p- people out there who want you to get that all base, and I mentioned 20,000 as a number. You might have a policy with all base that 20,000 is your premium that you're paying, and pretty close to that is what you're required to pay in every single year. That drastically reduces your chances of success for situations where you might run into life circumstances that impact your income. So I think that's really a great thing to think about.
Those are really the types of designs. I mean, that's on the extreme end of the bad designs, or what we would consider the bad designs, where it's like all base. Those are the kinds of designs that give life insurance, cash value life insurance, a bad name as a financial product. No cash growth for the first couple of years, high surrender charges, really doesn't fit very well in an overall financial plan as much of anything other than eventually maybe it could provide some small amount of savings.
And actually, if you do fund those for your entire life for many decades, they can be okay. The internal rate of return isn't the worst thing ever, but the chances of you arriving at that after seeing no cash value for a few years, when you have one of those poor designs, you're not going to get to those later years. That's just what's going to happen for most folks, unless it's a tiny policy. And the other thing about blending is you have the ability to cover more of your overall life insurance needs with that cheap non-commissionable term so that you don't have to pursue life insurance needs elsewhere. Your life insurance is serving two purposes, a death benefit and giving you the ability to put in more cash into that policy and fund it at a high level when you blend in that term.
Yeah, good point. A large base amount that carries a lot of expenses. Not very many people are going to be able to afford a large death benefit that's designed that way. When we design it properly for cash growth purposes, we get to blend in a whole lot of death benefit. So it's just like the side benefit that comes at a really low expense that they're able to have all this death benefit, which has a legit value to it. Like people need that death benefit in the case of early demise to help meet family income needs, right? Replacing income for the family, paying off bills. Like there's a legit need to have a death benefit, which we often don't think too much about when we're designing these good designs, but it just comes along with it. It's like an extra benefit.
I would say most people are probably underinsured for life insurance. If I was only looking at life insurance as a liability in terms of just having a term policy, it would be a hard pill to swallow for me to get the amount of life insurance that I feel would actually set up my family for success in the event that I passed away early. You know, the numbers that people will often throw out, 10, 20, 30 times your annual income, because, you know, the 4% rule is an example. That would be 20 times or 25 times your annual income in order to not touch your principal. That's something that most people are probably not insured that much, but I have a much closer to that, or I might even be exceeding that with my total death benefit, because that's the amount of death benefit I needed to fund to put the amount of funds that I wanted to into my policies. So that's just one thing. The way that I look at it is the death benefit is a tool for getting cash into my policies, but I'm also pretty well insured now that I have those policies.
And when I started doing this, I had almost no life insurance. And young males just tend to not think too much about dying and the impact that that might have on a family's income or the ability for the family to survive. And so I just didn't really carry any. But now that I have it, it's like, what was I thinking before? I have three kids, and me and the wife, when we go to travel, it's like, if we're traveling without the kids, what happens if the plane goes down? Oh, you know what? The kids are taken care of. We've got plenty of life insurance to protect us. But you go back a few years and we didn't have any. Boy, what type of risk were we taking in those situations without having that death benefit?
I was in the same boat before learning about this concept when I was soon to have my first son. I was like, oh, I need to get a life insurance policy. I got $500,000 of term. I still have that policy because it's cheap life insurance to keep. But in actuality, $500,000, that's only a few years of salary replacement for me at the time, or it was only a few years. I was definitely underinsured for my oldest son's early life. And then I discovered this concept. Now I'm in a much better place from a death benefit perspective. So I know this episode is really about the blend aspects of it, but I do think it's one thing that when we talk about this blend, it does get you likely into a better state when you're trying to fund these pretty high. You're getting into closer to those higher levels of death benefit to income. And I think that's a good thing overall.
Yeah, we really get the added benefit that we have this extra death benefit. It's coming in at a very low cost because of how we're doing this blended design. We can look at this one of two ways. We can either look at it as we want to fund a policy at a certain level, but the death benefit we want allows a funding at a much higher level than that. And we can do that at a very low cost. That gives us the ability to dump in a whole bunch of extra cash later on if we get an increase in income, if we come across a windfall and we just find ourselves with a bunch of cash, either from selling a property, maybe we get a bonus, maybe somebody else gives us an inheritance. There could be a number of reasons where we might have a bunch of money that suddenly shows up and we need somewhere safe to put it. That space could be there because we had this type of design that allowed us to just add this extra death benefit at such a low cost.
Yes, and I think that's a fantastic point. The death benefit that comes along with territory, giving you that extra space to put in cash, if you're not max funding it, it can be a really good thing. I mean, generally speaking, inflation, wages, your income's going to grow over time, ideally. I mean, most of the people who might be listening to this podcast are likely trying to target increasing their income, doing different things. Maybe it's real estate investment, various things. We got to think about those aspects and putting in a little bit of space, but you don't want to go overboard. But by having the non-commissionable term, we have the ability to go and add a lot of space to funding with minimal added expense. And I think that's very important for people to have if they want to fund at a decent level now or even 10 years from now.
We've talked a bit comparing the max blended design to like your normal basic design, which doesn't cover any blend. But what about the people out there to advocate for a small blend? Oftentimes we'll hear a 1090 might be an optimal blend. And you'll hear other people say, no, 60-40 is what they like to sell, or 70-30. In an all base design, it would be 100% base. And in a 90-10 design, it would be a 10% base. Well, that brings the expenses down by a factor of 10. Because the expenses are by and large based on that 10 number, not the 90. So in a 60-40 design, you're talking about four times the expenses inside of that policy than a 60-40 design. But it does have the ability to have some type of a blend. It could carry the possibility that lets somebody add extra funds into their policy down the road. What do you say to those folks?
When you actually run the numbers, it just does not make sense for most circumstances. The 90-10 or some carriers might be more like an 80-20. These are just going to perform better in both early cash value and long-term cash value. A lot of these folks will say, well, the higher base, a lot of these carriers will pay a higher dividend on that base. And that might be true, but they're paying on a smaller amount because you're missing out on some of that early cash value that it just never ends up catching up in the end. And in every case that I've seen, it's a 90-10 or whatever the optimized blend for the carrier is going to outperform those other designs.
That's basically my experience too with all of these carriers. With almost all of them, we want to do as big of a blend as we can. There could be a carrier that the best blended design is 90-10, or the best blended design with that carrier is an 80-20. And that can be a good carrier. In fact, one of our top carriers for potential cash growth. It's more like an 80-20 design. Excellent, excellent carrier, excellent design. Nothing wrong with the 80-20, but you can't do it better with that carrier. That's just the way the numbers play out. With another carrier, there is at least one carrier that I'm aware of that we can do a 97-3 design. 3% can be the base, 97 with the blend, but that actually isn't the most efficient design with that particular carrier. Now, from my playing around with it and doing illustrations and running the numbers, with that carrier, a 90-10 actually was the most efficient design. But there's still other people out there that are trying to sell 70-30, 60-40. I haven't figured out a way to justify that. in my practice, when I'm working with clients, I haven't figured out a way to justify that. In no circumstance have I seen, other than the 90-10 over the 97-3. The 97-3 would pay out a little bit lower commission than the 90-10. But there's a mechanism that happens in there that the carrier ultimately charges the client more money so that down the road it makes less money, even though it starts off with a little bit more. It's kind of like in the IUL space. That was a whole life policy. In the IUL space, they have riders that you can attach that does away with surrender charges. And so you might think that it's a more efficient design because there's no surrender charges. You have access to a little bit more cash value, but you have to pay for that. It costs money to give yourself the liquidity of not having any surrender charges. And so it works similar with that other carrier. It's like they're adding in some fee that gives you access to more money early on. And so it doesn't pay off in the long run.
And that's exactly why you want to have conversations with folks who are working in this space, who specialize in these high cash value designs, and also ask the right questions. And as you look at the illustration, you know, language you might look for is like enhanced liquidity. Stuff like that can impact your later cash value because they're charging for it, or high early cash value. These are things and terms that might be inside of a policy that can impact your long-term growth. Earlier, like I said, oh, well, you should go with the max blend that a carrier offers. That's, as James pointed out, that's not always the case. So it's best to have a conversation and know what your purpose is for a given policy. Discuss that with an agent who knows what they're doing in this space.
And certainly your funding level may affect it. If you're not funding at such a high level that we can't do the optimal blend, it might just be lower, and that's okay. Right? As long as it's optimally designed for how you're trying to fund it, that's the main goal here. And hopefully we're conveying the behind the scenes, the pull back the curtain type of information that you need to help make sure that you're getting the right type of design for what you're trying to do.
That's exactly it. When we're talking about a lot of these blends, 90-10 or 80-20, all of these are really based on somebody who probably wants to fund pretty close to what their limit is, or maybe they have plans to at some point. They're not always for everybody. If you are looking to fund at lower levels, it might make more sense to have a little bit less of a blend because you just don't anticipate funding that high. But it's just a tool that we have in the toolkit with being able to hit that max blend to achieve high funding levels for as low expenses as we can possibly do.
Now, this makes me think about some of the insurance salespeople out there. They say they don't like to do the max blend. There's no reason that you should have access to so much money in the first year, because if you do, you're just going to get in trouble. You might borrow it all out and go use it. You might go make a bad investment with it. And then what are you going to do? What do you say to those people?
I mean, I want access to liquidity if I need it. The way that I see it is we all need to make good decisions with our money. And I think that locking up funds in the event that you did have an emergency where you had to tap those funds. Now, I'm not saying go and buy a Lamborghini with your life insurance policy, but do things with your life insurance policy that are either covering emergencies or building out cash flowing assets or something like that, where you're building wealth using it. We have other episodes that will get more into that stuff, but I would want access to that liquidity.
Can we just agree that the amount of liquidity in the first year is not what's going to determine whether somebody is bad with debt or bad with making an investment? Like, that's not going to be the determining factor in that person's success just because they had access to more cash value. They're either good with their money or they're not good with their money. But the insurance agent charging them more doesn't make it a safer policy to own for people that are bad with their money and continue to overextend.
Absolutely. And I think the main point of it all, we want people to be set up for success, to build cash value, because we think these are great assets to build a great financial foundation. We want to make sure that you have access to that liquidity in the event that you need that to go capitalize on something or not, or you just leave it in there. I mean, it's a great asset. It's going to earn at a strong rate. We want to minimize those expenses so you have more cash inside of that policy.
Yeah, nobody's going to force you to touch the cash value in it. Obviously, for infinite banking practitioners, it's kind of key to being able to do this and other things. And so we're using this to enhance all of our other efforts. We're not looking at this as like the magic bullet. If you're looking to get something like this, try to get the optimized design. And you don't even have to trust us. You can go talk to multiple agents, find out what they think the optimal design is for your situation. Listen to their argument for it. They're probably going to vary a bit. The best design, they might even have different carriers that they're going to recommend. Agent A might recommend company C, and agent B might recommend company D with a different type of design, and company or agent C might recommend company A with a different type of design. I think there's value in hearing these people out. They all come from different points of view, different experiences. And maybe you do hear a good justified reason that a certain design that I might not consider optimized might be best for your situation.
I would say if you do find that, reach out to us, drop a comment on this, whatever, email us. I would love to hear about it if you find a circumstance where that actually does make sense to not go with the optimized blend for a given carrier.
Well, you say optimized blend, but in their mind, they might have gotten an optimized blend. It's just not the max blend.
True, yes.
I would second that call, though. Reach out to us. If you can think of a situation that warrants a higher expense design that benefits the client more, I would love to hear about it. I would love to see it, because I'm certainly open to being wrong about anything that we talk about. I'm always trying to learn and get better.
Yeah, I think that's what this whole channel is about. We're trying to educate other folks, and I think we have a lot of knowledge in this space and various spaces of business entrepreneurship, but it doesn't mean we know everything. And I think being open to hearing other people's perspectives is very important.
It's time for this week's call to action. Let's say that your call to action this week is reach out, interact with us, other agents, if you're interested in the space, obviously, if you're looking for a policy, and explore some different designs. I think that's a great call to action. Explore some different designs if you're looking for a policy. If you're not looking for one yet, just keep listening to the people out there. It will help you learn what people are selling. When you listen to what they're saying, it will help you to know whether you can trust that person or not.
I would also say that when you're looking at a design that you might get, if you are funding these with thousands of dollars a year, you should be seeing cash value in the first year. That is something to kind of keep in mind as you look at a policy. You want to see some cash value in those early years. With an optimized design, an optimal blend, you can see a high percentage in year one of that year one premium as cash value. As you go to work with an agent or look at what an agent sends you in an illustration, keep that in mind.
If you're not seeing good cash value growth early on in a policy, it should raise some red flags. I think that's a wrap for this week. Next week, we're going to be back with supplementing your retirement with cash value life insurance. So be sure to join us for that. My name is James Barber. I'm your Oregon Cashflow Pro, and you can find me at Oregon Cashflow Pro on YouTube.
And I'm Carlo Vaquera with NetWellFinance.com. And you can find me on YouTube at NetWellFinance.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks for watching.
The next 20 seconds determine your future. Subscribe, meet with us, or continue educating yourself with these videos right over here.